Sean Dunham is the Heritage Program Manager for the Chippewa National Forest. And as an archaeologist, his job is to dig into the history and culture of the Chippewa. Sean, thanks for coming in today.
Well, thank you very much for having me this morning. It's quite a pleasure to be here.
Well, I have been very interested in the Chippewa. A lot of people in our listening area live around and among the forest. So what are some of the most interesting places in the Chippewa Forest from an archaeologist's point of view?
Well, that's a very difficult question because there are numerous places that are very interesting from an archaeological and historical perspective. I think probably some of the most visible historical remains on the Chippewa National Forest are more than remains. They're still standing structures. We have a CCC camp up by Black Duck, Camp Rabideau, which is one of the most intact camps in the country. The supervisor's office in Cass Lake, this three-story log building, was also built by the CCC in 1936, and we're still using that as its original function as our headquarters. And similarly, there are other buildings from that era that are still in use across the building. So that's quite fascinating in and of itself. From an archaeological standpoint, this area is very diverse in archaeology and is quite a time depth. We have sites that go back almost 10,000 years on the Chippewa National Forest, and sites are being created every day in a sense, but based on federal guidelines that we use, something needs to be at least 50 years old before it can be considered historic or archaeological. So that takes us right up into the lifetime of many people alive today, including myself,
right,
that could be considered historical or archaeological sites. So we have recreation camps from the early 20th century that are considered archaeological sites. We have logging camps from that same period and earlier in the 19th century. We have homesteads from the late 19th and early 20th century, both Native American and European American or American homesteads from that period. We have fur trade sites from the 18th, 19th century on the forest. And we have sites from both the Ojibwa and Dakota past going back to that 10,000 year ago period.
Wow.
So numbers of different kinds of sites.
Is there a way people can find those sites and explore them on their own, or is it?
Well, what we're working on is trying to get some interpretive material out there. One thing that our public affairs office is working on is a device-based tour type of thing, where that people can use their cell phones to go about the forest, and there's going to be information about different places. We're working on as you might be aware, we just did a large renovation at K Dam, Knutson Dam, off of the scenic highway, and we have an interpretive sign up there now that talks about the previous structure that was there, and we're working on one now that'll talk about some of the historical and other information about that location. So we're starting to try to do more and more of that kind of interpretive type of thing. One of the things with a lot of archaeological sites that make them difficult to go view is that you'll get to a location and you'll see the same trees you saw 200 feet away.
You know,
so it makes it hard to tell if a given location is that. Once you get a sense of what's going on in the woods, particularly with more recent sites, you can start seeing evidence for those sites in the woods. There might be foundation holes or berm foundations, you know, where they would have banked up soil against the edge of buildings and things like that. So those leave telltale marks that you can see in the ground. Also, sometimes you'll see what we might consider a trash scatter, but those would have been a dump associated with a CCC camp in some cases, a logging camp, or even with a homestead. And those can be signs that people were out there doing things. And different kinds of sites might leave different sorts of evidence. Now, you might, come across a couple buckets in a grove of maple, and that might be evidence of an old sugar bush that somebody had worked maybe 100 years ago or at some point like that, too. So there's all sorts of different ways you see sites in the woods, but we're trying to come up with ways to make those at least some of the sites that are accessible, you know, places to go.
Well, you know, we're talking with Sean Dunham, and he's the Heritage Program Manager for the Chippewa National Forest and an archaeologist. You sent me some pictures, and I'm going to put those on our website today. One of the pictures you sent me was of a tricycle, an old tricycle. And I thought you just mentioned that 50 years back is kind of a cutoff point for something being considered archaeological or historical. What makes a site archaeological? I mean, as opposed to, say, the dump in the back of my property where people, you know, where you might find who knows what from who knows when.
Well, you know, both are sites, in a sense. In a very broad academic definition, you could say an archaeological site is any place that human activity took place in the past. So you could say that. And that would be true. And so the dump behind your house is an archaeological site of a sort. The question is, has somebody documented it, you know, as an archaeological site and began treating it in that way? There are lots of archaeological sites out there. I think, you know, we have, within the larger boundaries of the Chippewa National Forest, we have over 3,000 archaeological sites that we have recorded.
Oh, wow.
On Forest Service lands managed by the Forest Service itself, we have over 1,500 sites. They're everywhere, and they could be anything. You know, somebody, their snowmobile broke down in 1942, and they left some oil cans out along a trail. That's an archaeological site. Now, the difference then comes in is a site like that something you're going to actively manage and protect as an archaeological site? And, but, you know, by a strict definition, those are archaeological sites.
What are some of the oldest artifacts that you've found or that have been found in the Chippewa National Forest?
Well, I mentioned we do have some sites that go back, you know, almost 10,000 years ago. So around the time when the glaciers that once covered this area had receded, and then the people coming up following the herds of animals that they hunted came up into this area. And up, you know, kind of in the Cutfoot area, there is a site that dates to that period. You know, so people coming up that area would have been coming up into this new landscape that had just been available after the glacier in hunting. So we do have sites that old. And typically on sites like that, what you do find are large projectile points. Projectile points is the term that archaeologists use, that most people use our arrowheads for. Mm-hmm. But these projectile points, they're large, kind of long, slender points. And those would have been used on spears to hunt large animals like caribou. In some cases, they hunted mammoth with those and things like that.
Wow.
You know, the animals that used to live in this area.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine just firing a spear, your arrow that you made at a mammoth?
Well, this is throwing a spear, so you got to be close.
Holy buckets.
Yes, I can't even imagine that.
So. How have you ever found something that surprised you in the forest? Or do you expect most of
what you find? You know, from a surprise, you know, that occasionally you'll find a site in a location you don't expect it to be. You know, for example, you know, most sites, when you look at a distribution map of sites on Chippewa National Forest, most sites are on water.
Yeah.
It's hard to avoid water out there. But sometimes you'll find a large scatter of the remains of making stone tools in a place that's nowhere near water. And so that's kind of a surprise. You know, what were people doing out here, you know, in this area? So the assumption is hunting, but then so you try to piece together based on what we know about the current environment to see what might have drawn people to that location away from the water. So sometimes something like that will happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's snow on the ground right now and everything's covered up. It's pretty frozen. What does an archaeologist do in the wintertime?
Well, in the winter, we spend a lot of time looking at the materials or the things that we had done the summer before. And also with the Forest Service, one of the things I do is the Forest Service does a lot of activities on the landscape. And so one of my jobs is to make sure the historic sites and archaeological sites aren't disturbed or impacted by Forest Service activity. So I work with the timber program, the recreation program, the different programs that we have on the forest to see what their activities planned for the next year are going to be, or the next 2 years, or the next 3 years, and then make sure that we have adequate information about those areas, about what archaeological sites might be there. And if we don't have archaeological sites known there, to make sure that we'd look at those locations before those activities take place.
Oh, a lot of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. A lot of collaboration.
What might you be doing this summer? What will this summer bring for you?
Well, one of the things that we do every year is, because of our timber program, is look at areas where they're planning in the next 4 or 5 years to be doing some sort of planting or cutting of trees. And we work very closely on some of these larger surveys with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa's Historic Heritage Sites Program. And they do a lot of the legwork through some agreements that we have as far as going out to look at those specific locations. They're also going to be working with me on a project that we've been doing the last couple of years, where we've been looking at the route of the trail that used to go from Red Lake to Leech Lake. And what we've been doing is looking along that trail in certain areas that are on national forest lands to see if we can find evidence for activity associated with the trail. And we have been finding some sites that, based on the initial look, are probably associated with the Ojibwa from the late 19th and early 20th century, people's homesteads and houses and things like that.
You know, it seems like a lot of what people did was hunt, and they also had to travel. Mm-hmm. And so maybe some of those routes that you're finding that people have taken, that is a main place where you look for activity, the
yeah.
way people mm-hmm. traveled. And then can you tell us a little bit about that site at South Pike Bay Campground? That I'm just curious mm-hmm. about that, because...
Right, there is a what we call a multi-component site there. So what that means is that people from different periods were occupying that location, you know, through prehistory. So we have evidence for people living there possibly as early as 5,000 years ago, and all the way up to the time of contact with Europeans. And then later we have some other activity going up there, and most recently a CCC camp in that vicinity as well. But the site that, I'd sent a couple pictures from, we recently listed on the National Register for Historic Places. It's a site where... The Forest Service had done some Passport in Time projects in the past, and that's a Forest Service program in which encourages volunteers to come in and help work with Forest Service archaeologists on excavations. And so in the 90s, they were doing some work on that. And so this was a really interesting project from a variety of reasons, because we had the different archaeological occupations there, and also bringing in volunteers, and then the fact that we were able to bring that into a National Register location. So this is one of the locations that we're going to be trying to more actively interpret in the future.
And Passport in Time is a way that us lay people can get involved in
right.
archaeology in the forest?
Yes, it's a nationwide program. And I think you can participate year-round, but up here, usually it's in the summer that people can participate. Though I do know some forests that have had volunteers come in and help with artifact cataloging and things. I think the webpage is passportintime.com, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might be able to go spend a little time in New Mexico 1 week, come up to Michigan or Minnesota another week, and go from there.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Mm-hmm. How did you get into this? I mean, as a kid, were you interested in history? Or
yes, when I was really young, my family lived in the Chicago area, and quite regularly we would go to the Field Museum of Natural History, particularly in the winter, to spend a Sunday afternoon, and that kind of hooked me in. Started with dinosaurs, but then I shifted into human history in that. And then as I was growing up, my family took a lot of trips to historic sites. So we went down to St. Augustine in Florida, Michilimackinac in Michigan, different places, and did that kind of tourism, So it kind of hooked me in.
You are giving a presentation this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Headwaters Science Center in Bemidji. What are you going to cover on Saturday?
Well, it's going to be a kind of a fun thing for me, because it's a mixed crowd. There's going to be little kids all the way up to adults. So trying to present something that'll appeal to everybody. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the forest and what we've done on the forest, what we're hoping to do on the forest, and kind of the culture history of the forest. And I'm also going to bring some artifacts, that are kind of representative of the types of things that we do find, and let the kids take a look at those and see those and talk about that sort of thing.
Is it possible, if you're like on the lake, on a lake in the Chippewa Forest, that, just on the shore someplace, you might find something that is really rather old. And
you could, you know, it's you know, we kind of joke that, you know, any, you know, if it's a good place to camp now, it was a good place to camp then. Mm. You know, and so it's possible that you could find something. This, you know, kind of as a word of caution, if you do find something and you think it is, you know, an archaeological find, I encourage that, you know, to bring that in, you know, to us so we can take a look at it. It is a violation of a couple federal statutes to remove artifacts from federal land. And also a lot of the Chippewa National Forest overlaps with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwas Reservation, and they also have some regulations about that as well.
And your office is in that big old forestry building in Cass Lake?
Yep. Yeah, so you can bring that there, but you could also, depending on where you are on the National Forest, we have district offices in Deer River, Walker, and Black Duck, and so you could bring the material there, and somebody could either get a hold of me, or they might be able to help you there, too.
And then if you're really interested in checking out archaeology, you could be part of the Passport in Time program and actually help unearth some of our history.
Right. Yeah, we don't currently have a Passport in Time project planned on the Chippewa, but hopefully in the next few years we'll start that program again.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, thank you. It's been great to be in here and to meet you guys.
It's fascinating.
It is. That is Sean Dunham.
You can hear him on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Headwaters Science Center in downtown Bemidji.
Right.
2 p.m. Saturday.
Yep. Sean Dunham is Heritage Program Manager for the Chippewa National Forest. And you can get some photos of archaeology in the forest on our website later this morning. And that's at kaxc.org. Thanks again for coming in.
You're welcome. And thank you.
You are tuned to Northern Community Radio, 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXC Bagley and Bemidji, and 89.9 Brainerd, and 103.9 in Ely. Listen online anytime at kaxc.org. We are authentic local radio in northern Minnesota.